Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 271. I'm going to call this one 100-mile attempt prep. That's right. This is the week leading up to my 100-mile attempt at the CNO Canal 100 in Knoxville, Maryland, along the Potomac River, back and forth, upstream and downstream. That race will be the weekend of April 27th, 28th, heading out on the 26th. I got an excellent crew, and I've gotten some great advice, a lot of well wishes along the way. I'd like to thank Ashlyn Tom. Thomas, Sandy, Dirt Dog, Christelle, and had some nice wishes from Phil, Keith, Dr. Smitty, a.k.a. Greg, and Tim. And to say I'm nervous is an understatement. This is obviously the race of my life, the hardest thing I think I'm going to be attempting. And it's at a perfect time because I've got a lot going on this month. I've got... If you've listened to the show, you're familiar with me retiring from 27 years of law enforcement service. My last day of work will be Friday, May 17th, and it's kind of hard to even think about that because I got to get through the 100-mile attempt first. And the reason I call it the 100-mile attempt or my 100-mile attempt is because I make no assumptions whatsoever that I will finish. Of course, my goal is to finish, is to clear all 100 miles within 30 hours and get the belt buckle. But I know from running other ultras that strange things can happen along the way. That's just reality, especially for me. But I do have confidence going into going up to the starting line because I've had some great training. I have had numerous weeks at 50 and 52 miles. I haven't gone beyond that because then my body starts to really start feeling it. But I'm talking consecutive weeks at 50 miles plus. I've run, of course, in February, I did a 50-miler. I did the Little Rock Marathon March 3rd. I've covered the marathon distance in training and then had a follow-up recovery double-digit run the following day. I've done a 30-mile training run. I did that up on the course, which I'll talk about. And numerous other double-digit long weekends, double digits both days, Saturday and Sunday. Countless Saturdays getting up at 4, 4:30 to get out the door by 5:30, sometimes earlier, in order to get extra mileage in before I meet up with Ashlyn Tom or Ashlyn Bob to finish the training, and then we go out for coffee. It's one thing I've learned in training is if you're training for something that's longer than what your training partners are doing, there is no point in trying to do mileage past the group's goal because it's lonely and you don't want to do it because you just want to, at least for me, I just want to go have coffee and have breakfast. So I've gotten up earlier and then countless Sunday morning, 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m. wake up to get out the door to do 10 miles plus on several occasions after doing, awfully long runs on Saturday, getting out there and doing Sunday morning runs before mass. Because another thing I've learned is that I don't do so well coming home after church and trying to get out a double-digit run. I only had really one day where it was raining so hard that I could not get outside, and I did that run on the treadmill at the YMCA, which is near us. I've got two options to train when I have to train inside. I have access to what's called the Brock Center, which is at Randolph-Macon College, which is a college in the town where I live, and I'm able to get access to that gym. But the problem on Saturdays is it doesn't open until 9 a.m. The YMCA opens at 7. So I was able to utilize that. We have a family membership over there, and so I'm able to go over there. The reason I don't go over there too often is because I end up running into people that I know, and I end up talking, and I don't get the training in that I want to do, or if I'm doing weights. Brock Center is mostly students, and I'm very invisible over there, so that's why I prefer to do that. So I had no setbacks in training, no injuries, no blistering, didn't fall, no overuse injuries. I did lots of run walks, and I just really think that is going to be the key, and that's going to be my strategy. My strategy is going to not have any illusions of running 20 to 24 to 26 hours. I'm focused on the 30-hour cutoff, which is perfect for a first time attempt at a 100-miler. It's perfect to focus on the cutoff and not anything else. And I haven't even looked at my 50-mile training run or 50-mile races to try to see and extrapolate out what I would do at 100, because the people I've talked to say that, especially Ashlyn Tom, who I've talked to probably the most about the 100-mile attempt, is how the mileage gets exponential. It's not just a repeat of the first 50. It kind of gets exponential, at least the experience does, and it becomes very, very mental. Now, I did go up to, on March 30th, I was up at the venue, which is the CNO Canal. The race director put on he put on two organized training runs. I was able to make the one on March 30th that started at 8 a.m., and it took me about 2 hours to get up there. So I left pretty early, drove up, and the plan was to do 30 miles on the race course. He set it up where he had some aid, and we started at an area called Brunswick, which is a train station for the MARC. That's M-A-R-C, and I think that's an acronym for the train or some kind of commuter train that goes on of that part of Maryland. I'm not that familiar with it. And there were only eight of us, and it wasn't really a real friendly bunch. There was no, going around the circle and introducing themselves or where you're from or anything. When we got started, I met, I think it was Matt from Hanover, Pennsylvania, and then a guy named Dieter. And that was about all I did. I was pretty much by myself for the next 6.5 hours, with the exception of other people using the trail. And what the race director did is at almost the halfway mark, or in between the halfway mark was the turnaround was at 15 miles upstream. So the course went along the Potomac going upriver, and then the Shenandoah River comes in from the west, and then you're then running along the upper Potomac River. And about halfway up before the turnaround at 15 miles, he had set up some aid supplies. And by the time I wasn't last, of course. So by the time I got there, almost all the Gatorade was gone. And I got a little concerned that there wasn't going to be much for me on the way back inbound downstream, but everything turned out just fine. And I really did like the course setup a lot. It's all along the Potomac River and or the canal. It's scenic. There's stuff to look at. That's of course during the day. At night it's just going to be dark, and it's going to be very dark in there unless there's lights on and houses across the river. And I think it's going to be pretty neat. There's no way to get lost. I think the main thing is just to make sure to go up to the start finish as part of closing some of the loops. But I'm seriously thinking about just starting with the five walking for the first 5 minutes of the race to make sure that I stay slow. And it starts at 7 a.m. on Saturday, April 27th, and then goes to 1 o'clock. 1 p.m. on Sunday, April 28th, and that's the 30 hours to get the belt buckle. You have to finish in the 30 hours to get the buckle. If you're not going to make the last cutoff, I believe he'll let people finish if they want to, but they won't get the buckle. I'm not sure if you'll even be in the results or not. But obviously, my goal is to finish in the 30 hours, and whatever strategy it takes to get there is what I'm going to do. So I'm probably going to start with the 5 and 5, and I'll more than likely do that for as long as possible, because that's what I did when I went up there for the 30-mile training run, and didn't rush it at all. Took all the time I needed. The race director insisted, just take all the time you need. And I came in around 6 hours 20 minutes for 30 miles. So, and I found myself running too fast. So I still need to slow down, and I worked on that in some of my training runs to maybe walk a little bit slower. I know, come 60 miles plus, the 5 minute, if I'm running 5 minutes at that point in time, will be much slower, slower pace. But I have found that including a lot of walking and walking with a purpose and not just lollygagging during training has been very beneficial to me, because it uses different muscles. As a matter of fact, some of my training runs towards here the end, when I peaked, I was doing 2 7-milers in the middle of the week. And sometimes for one of those, I would do, I would power walk the whole thing. And I was finding I could walk fast 4.6 miles in an hour, which isn't too bad. Of course, that's being fresh. So there's just so many darn variables, And of course, the weather at this point does not look like it's going to be one of those. The weather for Saturday, April 27th is sunny, a high of 66, low of 47. There's going to be showers in that area the day before. Sunday says partly cloudy, high of 70, low of 52. So if we look overnight, looks like maybe the low will be almost the mid-40s. So I'm obviously going to bring hat, gloves, things of that nature, maybe even some – I'll definitely bring long pants. The biggest issue is going to be is the crew access. And I'll get to that here in just a little bit when I talk about my crew. But something I would like to share is my weight. I've been able to get my weight down to 200 at the lowest point. And that's from 227 where I was last fall. And when I had a physical for work, we have to get a physical exam every year. And I couldn't believe it when I was up at 227. And I even checked on, I thought the scale at the doctor's office was off. So I actually checked that at on a different scale, and it was similar. And I was very surprised. I don't know how things got to that point. So I made a decision to not eat as much. And I realized I can still run just as far by not eating as much. Cut out French fries, which was really hard to do, and just I would eat a lot more pieces of fruit, and that seemed to work real good for me. So instead of having potato chips or Sun chips or some kind of something with a sandwich for lunch, I would have a sandwich and then a banana or a sandwich or an apple. I'd cut up an apple and put it in some lemon juice and put it in a little container and just kind of nibble on that. And all that seemed to work out real well, so I'm very pleased that come race day, I'm going to be right around, I weighed myself the other day, I'm up at 201, but I think I'll be right around 200 for race day, and that is going to be, I'm really pleased with that. I was worried that I was going to get to a point in time where I just couldn't get past 210, couldn't get under 210, and I didn't do anything drastic. I just cut some of my portions, and I know the extra mileage I've been doing has been burning a lot more calories. And I haven't been tired. I haven't had the exhausted feeling that I've gotten before when I've done a lot of high mileage week after week. And I did build in some fallback weeks there to recover. And so what I've decided to do this week, today's Easter Sunday. Happy Easter. It's a week of April 27th or April 21st. I did 7, 5, 10, and 5 for this weekend. So 7 and 5 runs during the week and then 10 and 5. And that's it. And I'm not going to run at all this week. I might go out for a walk with my dog one day this week. But my plan is just to rest as much as possible and eat as good as I can and not do a bunch of junk. And we'll see what happens. I don't know. At least the weather's not part of it, because I had read Sandy's blog about when she had done this race. And she was a DNF, but it wasn't really because of any lack of effort on her part. Is because she was out there on the course when somebody needed some assistance, and it was rainy and cold, and someone was having a serious health problem, and she opted to assist in that as opposed to go at it solo. And so the weather, if you have a cold rain in the middle of the night and it's low 40s and it's cold and it's rainy, and for me that'd be a recipe for disaster, not to mention probably get kind of negative. So it looks like, at least looking at the forecast at this point in time for that area of Maryland, it looks like it's going to be decent weather. And if it stays only of a high of 66 on Saturday, which is going to be the bulk of the run, which is the hours on Saturday, high of 66 and sunny. The sunny, being sunny concerns me a little bit, but I can block the sun as much as I can, but at least it's not going to be high 70s. It's going to be, at least right now, 66 and northwest winds of 10 miles an hour, 44% humidity, which is going to be good. That's good. So that's all those factors. The weather is a variable. Does not look like it's going to be much. So with that being said, I have waited to, I did not buy a high quality rain jacket because I don't think I'm going to need it at this point. So getting the weight down, knowing the weather's going to be good, getting all the training, as Ash and Tom says, all the hay's in the barn at this point, there's really not much more you can do. I did some serious long runs, double long runs. I don't know what else to say. I did the mileage that I had in my plan. Here and there, I might have shaved off 2 miles just for time, but I did not just I never did just say, get up on Sunday morning and say, you know what, I'm just not going to do it today. I did get out there, and some of it was pretty hard to do. But in order to get the goal, you got to do the homework. So let me talk a few minutes about my crew and how that's going to work. The course is three loops, but it's like out and back type of loops. And it starts up in a campground called Manadokan Campground and Retreat Center. And then at one of the main turnarounds is a place called Brunswick. And so my crew can only access me at two places during the 100-mile course. However, those areas are passed numerous times. But the first crew access is going to be at mile 28.8. And that does concern me just a little bit because that's past the marathon distance. And I know that I'm going to probably before that time, I'm going to want to change into some dry socks, especially if there's a stream crossing at the very beginning, which means I would have wet shoes and socks right at the beginning. I think really the only thing I'm going to be able to do there is probably just bring some dry socks in my waist pouch. I'm going to carry a handheld bottle. I haven't decided if I'm going to carry two or not, because some of the distances between aid stations isn't bad. 4.9, 3.8. Looks like the longest one is going to be 6.9. I'm looking at the chart here. I'm going to carry this chart with me out on the course. So the longest distance between aid stations is 6.9. Looks like it's mostly 4.9 miles. The only time I would think I would want two water bottles between aid stations would be during probably past the 50-mile mark when I'm doing a lot of walking, and you drink more when you walk. So I got to give that some more thought. But after the first crew access at 28.8 miles, the next one is then at 38.4, which is the finish of loop one. And then the second and third loops are not as long as the first one, obviously. And then the next access is 20 miles later at 59.6. This is crew access, not aid stations. And then at 69.2, again at 90.4, and then the finish line at 100.0. So there's going to be some distance between crew access. I can pick up a pacer at 59.6 miles. It doesn't have to be the same pacer. Pacers can be switched out at aid stations, but you just can't have crew access at the aid stations in between because there's just no parking. So I got to kind of memorize some of these mileages here so I'll know when I'm out there what I can be thinking of. And the reason I like accessing my crew is because most of the ultras I've done, I've kind of had access to crew almost at will, especially when I do some of these point-to-points at the beach or when I did the Keys 50. You can kind of access your crew wherever they can park. Same thing with the Outer Light to Light 50 in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. This one's going to be completely different. So after I had the first crew access at 28.8 miles, the next one is, 10 miles later, first start finish. The first loop, it's first start finish, and then the next one is almost 20 miles after that. And so I'm going to really be relying on these aid stations, and so I'm not going to be able to use the Tailwind, that a powder drink that I like to use, and that's not really, unless he has it at the race, and I don't think he does. I have to ask him about that, the race director. So that's got me a little concerned, just so much time between crew access. But over the course of 100 miles, having access to your crew that many times is really pretty good, I think. And for a 100-mile race, I would think. I don't have any experience at 100 miles. But there's just so many aid stations, and you go back, you go through the same handful of aid stations during the whole race. So definitely get to know some of the volunteers, who I'm sure will work different shifts. It's just so much to take in, so much to take in. Let me talk a little bit about who's going to be my crew. So I'm not really a solo runner type. I think I've, in my career, running and marathoning career as a amateur recreational runner, I think I drove up to, I did the Lower Potomac River Marathon, drove up there myself, ran it, and drove home myself. And that's still the best marathon I've ever run at 4:17. And then I drove out to an 8-hour race and did that, and then drove home by myself. Everything else I've done is always involved at least somebody else that I've gone out there to the race with, usually Ashlyn Tom. I did the one in Michigan, but I had Marisa was my crew. So I like to do these things with other people. So I have assembled a crew, and it kind of grew. The crew grew, and initially, it was gonna be John Snuggs and my good friend Lummox from Annapolis, and he was gonna come over from Annapolis, Maryland. And of course, my wife was going to be there, and I just cannot do these things solo, nor do I want to, because if I get in some kind of health trouble, or I get injured, or something bad happens, it's nice to have somebody there to help you out. And so the main part is just to talk somebody into coming out there. So of course, my wife was going to do that, Monica, and then a huge surprise was Ashlyn Bryan, who is now Atlanta Bryan, call him, or Georgia Bryan. He moved from Ashland to Atlanta for work, but we still stay in touch. And he is going to be flying up Friday from Atlanta to Richmond and then hooking up with Ashlyn Tom. And then they're going to hook up Saturday morning with Snuggy Bear. That's John Snuggs. We call him Snuggy Bear. And they're going to, the three of them, I believe, are going to come up in one car. My good friend Lummox will come over in another car, and then, of course, Monica will have our car. And so my crew is going to have three cars, and we're going to have to get things kind of consolidated a little bit. So now I have five people who are going to crew me or see me fail or succeed, one or the other. And I'm just real flattered that Brian's coming. And we were all there for when Tom attempted his 100-miler, so this is kind of a little bit of a reunion for that, in a way. Anyway, so my crew is good, and Tom and Snuggs are going to kind of be the point people. Monica's not going to do the all-nighter. She is going to go back and sleep in the hotel room that we've got in between the northernmost point of the race and the southernmost point of the race. So that way, going between crew access points, which is at the southern, or kind of the middle, and I'm sorry, the middle. There's really three points to this race. There's the middle, which is the Manadokan start-finish area, which is a crew access point. And then you got the northernmost point, which is not a crew access point. And then you have a southernmost point or easternmost point, which is Brunswick. Our hotel is in Knoxville, which is between Manadokan and Brunswick. That's what I meant to say. So it's centrally located where anybody going between, if they have to go, you know, seriously to the bathroom or need to go to a motel room for some reason. We actually have two rooms, might not even be using the second one. The second one is kind of as a safety valve in case I don't finish, something happens and it's 2 a.m, we're not driving home. We're going to go stay in the room. I'll stay with my wife. And then of course the other guys can stay in the extra room unless they choose to drive home in the middle of the night, which I would hope they would not. I would hope that they would sleep through and then go home in the morning. Have to plan for that because I don't, what if something was to happen and say I had to drop from the race, you got all these people up there and you haven't taken care of them. So we did that just as a safety valve, and I have no problem eating that money if we don't need the room. Obviously, hopefully that doesn't happen, but I just can't say enough about the guys that are committing their time to do this. They all have families, all got other obligations on the weekends. And it just, so I want to finish it for them too, finish for myself, but also to show my appreciation for the people that are supporting me. Now, everybody on that list of people I just mentioned has a role to play, and they also have had a role to play in my training and my success up to this point. And I've said before, it'll hit me at some point emotionally in the race. It's done this before where, you know, it's a selfish sport. You ask these people to come out and basically watch you and help you. But the only thing they get out of it is just knowing that they helped somebody else. They're not the one that's getting the achievement. But I've gone and helped other people a lot too, and it's kind of a pay it forward type of thing. I'm not really sure where I'm going with that thought process, but I guess my point is that this is not something that I've gotten to this point by myself. I've been out. Ashton Bob is not on that list, but he's been out with me, I think, every single Saturday morning for months. And just to give you an example, some days I could tell he didn't want to run or he was just maybe not up for it. One of those days was yesterday when he came out and did 10 miles with me, and he's got some kind of major chest congestion that he brought back from, I think they went to Florida for spring break, and he caught something down there. And he wasn't doing anything during the week, and he came out and did the 10 miles with me on the weekend. We did a run-walk strategy that I thought worked well. Matter of fact, we did kind of like an 8-2 kind of thing, or a 6-1, and we still finished the 10 miles in just a hair under 2 hours. So I'm still running too fast, and if I don't get that in my head come race day to slow the freak down, there is just no way I'm going to cover this. And then, of course, being on my feet for that amount of time. So I've still got to put together my checklist. Got a lot to do there. I got to get a backup headlamp. I'm not really sure what we're going to do yet when my Garmin gives out. I like to know where I am with distance. However, we had a conference call with the crew. We're going to do another one Tuesday night. Lummox has been setting that up. Just so if there are questions, we can answer those, or I can email the race director and get some of these answers. And I think what we came up with is once my Garmin goes out, which it'll still work up to and past 60 miles. I'm pretty sure of that because it has before. If it charges properly, I know it'll last 50. Then at that point, whoever's my pacer is going to be in track of in charge of the mileage and knowing how far to the next aid station. Because we have this handy chart here, and man, I just hope everything goes the way it should. Gotten lots of good advice along the way. Maybe you can sense nervousness in my voice. I am nervous. I'm nervous just thinking about it. But I got to do some mental preparation. I really do. And I'm going to have to probably carry some stuff in my waist pouch that I'm not used to carrying, like some extra lube, extra socks. I do have some extra pouches I can put on there that I've run with during training, and I've put some stuff in there just so I know how it feels. I don't run with a camelback. I find that all it does is just make my shirt right up my back, and I don't like filling those up, and they leak. I've always had one that leaks. I bought one. It never really worked the way I wanted it to. I know there's lots of good technology out there now. I just don't like anything on my back or over my shoulders. Unless it's another jacket or something. So I'm going to stick with the Ultimate Direction handheld. I'm going to take both of them. And if I don't need the second one, I can just carry it looped under my other hand empty. And each one of those has a little pouch too. So I can put goos in there or whatever I need. I also need to make sure I have a backup iPod. And as you can tell, I have not even formulated my checklist yet, which I do for every race that I do. I put together a checklist based on old checklists, and I'm going to have to add some extra stuff to here. Last thing I'll talk about is shoes. I bought two new pairs of the Ultra Paradigm. They're the same colors because I can only get one color in the 12.5 size, which is what I wear. These shoes are awesome cushioning. I've broken in both pairs by doing 20 miles in one and I think 15 in the other. And I'm going to have to use gaiters because when I went up there for the training run, I did get lots of pebbles in my shoes from time to time. And I did stop and have to dump those out. So I'm going to try the gaiter. I should have done the gaiters on the training run up there. I don't know why I didn't. But I'm going to wear those. And I also, for the 30-mile training run, I experimented with the leg compression sleeves, which I've been thinking about for a long time. I finally purchased them and used them for the first time at that 30-mile training run, and I used them kind of off and on since then. And I'm pretty sure I think it helps me. So I'll probably start with those, and if at some point if they just get too hot, I'll just take those off. So that's a lot. Next podcast, episode 272, will be Finish or Fail. It's going to be one or the other because there's only you only finish or you don't finish when it comes to 100 miles, I guess. So I'll have the next show out the week after that. So I'm off from work the week after the race, regardless of how I do. I'm pretty sure I can get up to 80 miles. After that, it's going to be really weird. It's going to be weird between 60 and 80 anyway. And the whole idea of running from aid station to aid station is a great idea, but that... That's going to be, I guess I can do that. I don't know. I got to come up with some mental games to come up with. So the shoes, I'm going to run in those two pairs, and then I'll have, and I call those pairs 3 and 4. I've had to write with a magic marker on the heels so I know which shoes stay with which. And I've got pairs 1 and 2. that I will bring up there that still have some mileage left on them, just in case something happens to those other shoes. I have something that still is in decent shape for a backup. So I'm going to have a car full of stuff, and let's hope I come back to the center of the universe with the belt buckle. Let's just keep your fingers crossed. As for tracking, if you go to the CNO Canal race site, which I'll have at I'll have the link to that at ashlanddave.podbean.com. I believe there is runner tracking if you want to register there. However, if you're like me, you wouldn't want to get texts or notifiers in the middle of the night and then realize that you forgot to turn off the notification when that first one comes through late in the night. So I'm going to also have updates going out to anybody that cares, listeners to the show, if you want to follow along while you're awake. Twitter at Ashland Dave, and that's my Twitter, at Ashland Dave, A-S-H-L-A-N-D-D-A-V-E. And I will have somebody with somebody will access my account and put out the updates, and hopefully they won't forget to do that. All right. See you on the other side. This is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish. Keep on running. Don't forget to hug your kids, and I'll talk to you on the other side.